Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 338 for comics originally released on January 29th, 2014. Now, starting us off in DC is Earth 2 Annual Number 2. Now, this is the shocking origin of Batman revealed, which is, as I recall, we talked about the Earth 2 Annual Number 1, which was supposed to be the shocking introduction of the Earth 2 Batman, and we got, like, you know, a glimpse of him. So I will admit I went in skeptical, and probably overly so since they've switched writers on the book. I thought this did a really good job of giving a solid backstory for the new Earth 2 Batman. I was surprised by who it was. I did not see that coming. My guess is totally wrong, for what we did back in Weekly Comic Spotlight 303. I also thought that the change of the art styles and the coloring and such for the different time frames really made some of that work great. I was very pleased with this. What were your thoughts on it?
Oh, it was great. Night and day between Annual 1 and Annual 2, both Batman features, but you had so much substance here. So much to wrap your mind around. Not only was it a really cool origin that I did not see coming, and I really enjoyed the pacing, everything. And I remember vaguely the Earth 2 first annual, just yearning for a panel or two of Batman and getting woefully not very many.
I was going to say, in fairness, we got a panel or two of Batman. And yeah, that was disappointing then. It was a little surprising how much of this was all backstory and whatnot, and how virtually none of it was kind of present-day aspect of it. I mean, we see nobody else from Earth 2 in this other than really at the tail end, which, you know, is really just almost a framing sequence sort of a deal. I was okay with that, but I was surprised.
Yeah, we got a lot of both Batman, really, you know, in this. So we get to see some of the Batman that we lost in issue 1 of Earth 2, as well as the current Earth 2 Batman. So that was really cool. And to kind of see them throughout the book. And I mean, we got so much more than we received in all the other previous issues put together. So it's great.
What I liked about this, and I don't want to give away who this Batman is, but it sets up a really interesting dynamic if this Batman from Earth 2 and the new 52 mainstream Batman, if they ever meet, because they are very clearly different kinds of people. And I see story potential there that just jumps off the page. Whereas, you know, in other cases, you know, like with the Peter Parker Spider-Man and the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man, there was nothing inherently interesting should those or when those characters were to meet, other than the, hey, Peter Parker and the Ultimate Universe had died, there's that aspect. But I like how they're building in some storied potential if they ever do a cross-universe story with the new 52 characters and the Earth 2 characters.
I actually thought Spider-Man worked pretty well.
Oh, I thought it worked. I enjoyed that crossover, but I don't think there was anything about Miles Morales when he was introduced that made me think, wow, I think him meeting the mainstream Spider-Man would just be really interesting because of this.
Oh, I gotcha. Whereas this is going to build in.
Yeah, this has some story hooks that just naturally pop out, I think, at least to me. And there's nothing good or bad. They may never come to fruition or whatever, but it's kind of like what we're seeing with Dan Slott and the Superior Spider-Man. The stories they're telling, the things they're setting up, just naturally invite certain stories to be told later. That's kind of a forward-thinking aspect of continuity in a shared universe and that I just don't see getting exercised that often, or that well, I should say. I see it a lot, but sometimes it always feels like they're almost picking up pieces that just happen to be left on the floor than seeds being planted. So I enjoyed that aspect of this quite a bit. again, Tom Taylor, this I think is really a good showcase for what he's capable of doing with this group of characters, because it gets away from the, wow, it's so similar to Injustice that he's done and right. things like that.
And we had just kind of talked about that when we were reviewing Injustice and thought, well, we hope he does this in future Earth 2 issues, that he does kind of draw a line and show that he can write differently. And he does here. It's a very different tone, very different style, and very solid, very competent, very engaging, but in a different way.
The other thing that was kind of cool about this is it is a good, done-in-one, self-contained story, yet it does play into the larger storyline for Earth 2, and thanks to that framing sequence kind of aspect, is anchored in time within that larger picture. So I appreciate how it's not just a done-in-one throwaway story, yet it's also not marred in the minutiae of everything else going on in the series.
Yeah, very much what you want in an annual, self-contained
exactly.
and part of the bigger picture, but a self-contained story. It's exactly what you want.
I would go so far as to say that's what I want in pretty much every issue of a title.
Yeah, me too.
I think with the annual, they've got more time, more space, more room to do that, but yeah. For me, very solid 4 out of 5. I was very pleased with this. Enjoyed it a lot.
A 4 out of 5 for me as well. I really enjoyed it. It cemented this title in my pull list because I had abandoned it as James Robinson's run wound down. Hopped back in because of Tom Taylor and enjoyed those first couple, and then this kind of really locked it in place. And so... I'm going to be on this title going forward.
I think the next big move for Tom Taylor at DC career-wise is getting another monthly title. I don't want to see him off this or off Unwritten, but no, he's not doing Unwritten. He's starring in Unwritten. Never mind. Ignore me. He's in Injustice. He's writing Injustice. It's so confusing. It's so metatextual.
That's unfortunate name.
Yes. Anyways, the next big move, I think, for him is to get a title that is firmly set in the New 52 continuity, because right now, both with Injustice and with this, with Earth 2, he's doing stuff off on the side. That gives him a certain great freedom that he's really running with and doing some great stuff with. I'm curious how well he would do, and I think he'd do wonderfully, inside kind of the constraints of a regular New 52 title.
Well, I'm curious how anyone can do in the constraints of the New 52 under DC editorial, because it doesn't seem like anybody lasts very long except for a couple people. So I don't know if I wish that on him at all, actually. I think he should just stay on these two titles and hide.
That's a very fair point. I see the wisdom of your words. It could be a horrible career move. I take back everything I said. I may edit that out.
Poor guy. You know, we don't want to wish that on him.
He's doing great stuff. I'd like to see him play with some of the characters.
Yeah, if he could play that game, that would be, you know, he would really, he'd be the man. He would, really would.
He's one of the people I see having really the writing chops to grow into a key architect and player in the DC universe, or Marvel for that matter, but I mean, we've really seen him at DC and with those characters. And until he gets a foothold in the New 52 world, he's still kind of, again, off on the sidelines a little.
Yeah, exactly.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This is Night of the Living Deadpool number 2. This is a 4-issue miniseries. Written by Colin Bunn. This was one that I'm more or less all in at Marvel and DC in the mainstream universe. This is one of those that's really not set in the Marvel universe proper. It kind of is, the world's been taken over by zombies. I'm going to say it isn't set in there, but it's not so much so that it's blatantly not set in there. It seems to be the mainstream Deadpool. So I debated whether I wanted to get this or not, and I figured, what the heck. It sounds like fun. And I thought the first issue was a ton of fun, and it had, the gist of that is basically, he wakes up, the world's been taken over by zombies, and he's like, well, what's going on? Much like a certain sheriff who woke up one morning after having, you know, been in a coma for about a month, and the world had been taken over by zombies, and he's like, hey, what's going on? I'm loving the art style here. It's got a nice, clean, line work. The black and white with red for Deadpool makes him kind of stand out as he really should, because he's out of place, not only in this, but he's kind of out of place in the Marvel Universe at times. I'm really enjoying this. How did this work for you? Because I know this isn't something for everybody.
I don't like Deadpool normally. I don't like the Brian Posehn, Jerry Duggan book at all. That sensibility just doesn't work for me. So I was very hesitant when you threw this out there. And I kind of, you didn't see me, but I was rolling my eyes saying, all right, I'll review it, but you're not going to like it.
And well, I'm going to like it. Were you going to like it is the question.
And I was very pleasantly surprised. I loved the first one. I loved the second one. I love the black and white art with Deadpool as the spot of color. I thought that was really cool. I love when they're going from site to site and dismissing the different locales, and all the different locales that could be safe havens are zombie movie tropes or zombie media tropes that we've seen, you know, shopping malls, farms, prisons.
Some of these I didn't take just as zombie tropes, but I mean, we start out in the city, they do a little pillaging there, then they move out, then they go to the farmhouse. Oh, they skipped that. Wasn't there a farmhouse in The Walking Dead? You know, they get to the prison, they get to, you know, after that, they're out in the woods for a bit. It seemed like that 1 week, 2 week, 3 week, 4 week, you know, through eight or whatever, I maybe I'm just misremembering stuff, but it seemed to very much parallel what was going on in the Walking Dead, or at least the locales, because obviously they're like a panel there and he just moves on.
No, I think it's basically all zombie fiction in general, because the bar is referenced to Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
The park is a reference to Zombieland. The prison is very much a Walking Dead reference, and the farm is very much a reference. And then the mall, of course, is the Night of the Living Dead, George Romero stuff. So yeah, I think it's not just Walking Dead. It was a bunch of different, zombie media that had been out there. And, I thought that was super clever.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cool.
Well, what I enjoyed is the first issue of this kind of paralleled aspects of The Walking Dead number one. And then in this issue, particularly those couple of week periods there, that two-page spread, they like roll forward the clock quite a bit to much more like the current status quo, or moving towards that, of where The Walking Dead is. So obviously they're not playing strictly to that. They are dealing with just kind of the general zombie tropes, like you said. Well, and one of those in particular was the MJ cameo on page three, which I assume you noticed. When they've got the car coming in or whatever, and there's word balloons covering this guy walking across the street. Pretty sure that's Michael Jackson from Thriller. I liked the Easter eggs. I liked the sense of humor about it. I enjoyed that it wasn't slapstick. It was having fun with the premise and the concept. It was a really fun mashup of like a Deadpool story and a parody of zombie stories.
I totally missed that. Totally missed that. That's awesome.
I saw that, and it's like, well, why is there a word balloon over this? You know, did the artist like really mess up on the face? Oh. I really enjoyed this issue. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'm not going to claim it's the least bit deep or moving or life-changing or whatever. I didn't expect it to be. I expected it to be a fun read. And it is. The story is rock solid. It is enjoyable. It is fun. And it's really the artistic touch, both of, again, the really nice art that's drawn, and the choice they made of how they colored it, with Deadpool is kind of the color aspect in a black and white zombie film. I don't know. I just, that really clicked with me. I thought it was a nice stylistic touch. I'm glad this is a 4-issue miniseries. It'll come, it'll go, it'll do its thing and move on. I don't think I would want this as a regular series or something. But I'm enjoying it a lot more than I thought I might. And I'm glad I gave it a shot.
Oh yeah. I think Colin Bunn's writing is really good. His voice is really engaging. I love the writing style, and I think we talked about the art. Roman Rosanos. I'm not familiar with his work. Ramon Rosanos, but it was really good. And like you were saying, the starkness of the black and whites with his Deadpool's color was great. Some of the characters, you know, we got to know these characters pretty quickly, and And it is a very harsh zombie tale underneath the humor too. I mean, these characters are not all safe and sound, and it's really a great book. And I've read them both back to back, and it was a great read. But I'm trying to just separate just issue two, and I don't know if I can do that fully because I love this so much. I gave it a 5.
Wow.
And it's my first 5 of the year, and I recommend this. And I know the guy, you trade waiters out there, this is going to be a great trade. I got a feeling this is going to be a really nice read, 4-issue read when it's out as a trade. It's a lot of fun, and we get in the last panel we get a little mystery. Last couple pages we get a little mystery for what the rest of this this book might be, but. This intro, these first two issues have been great, and this issue in particular was fantastic, and I loved it, and I'm super surprised that I'm saying that. It's a 5.
Cool. I'm glad you were willing to give it a shot then, because again, like you said, your eyes are rolling. You were skeptical, and understandably so. for the record, though, that's your second 5 out of 5 for the year.
What else did I give a 5?
Black Widow #1.
Jeez, I'm an easy grader.
Yeah. For me,
I did like it. That was good, too.
For me, this was a lot of fun. Again, I'm not really into the zombie stuff, hence not catching some of the references or whatnot. Very solid 4 out of 5. Fun stuff. If you're into zombie stuff, if you're willing to go with the Deadpool story, and again, it's not for everybody, as is any Deadpool story. I think there's a bit of an acquired taste there. This was really well done, and I think a lot of people are going to skip it for whatever reason, thinking it's just a cash grab, you know, cheap parody, whatever. I think it's got more substance than that. So, solid 4 out of 5. Really looking forward to the next 2 issues.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, next up, we've got our other book, which is Serenity, Leaves on the Wind #1. At least I think that's the full title. Please tell me they didn't go with... Yeah, no. The official title isn't just what I thought. Serenity, Firefly Class 03, K64, Leaves on the Wind #1.
I wondered if that was part of the title.
If you look on the inside front cover, they've got the official name in there right before they give the published by stuff or whatever in that tiny print.
Yeah, there it is.
So I think the editor, who is Scott Alley, had to approve that, and shame on him.
That's terrible.
Why have that kind of a crazy name? I mean, that's a nitpick. I get it, but come on.
If you want to reinforce it's from Firefly, end it at Firefly. Serenity : Firefly Leaves on the Wind. You don't need the class of Ought3-K64.
I would be surprised if that classification or whatever was ever revealed in the TV show or the movie. Speaking of which, have you seen the TV show or the movie?
Yeah, both.
Okay, cool. Because this takes place, I mean, a little time has passed since the Serenity movie, when the story opens, and the news of Miranda, which is a key element of the movie plot, has caused an uproar, and this is kind of what's going on with the Serenity crew, and what, you know, how has their life changed after the movie? I think if you haven't watched the movie, you should be able to understand what's going on here, but I don't think you'll have any context to really appreciate it. The whole what happened in Miranda is revealed early on here, but it's academic knowledge versus the more visceral understanding and true appreciation of it you would get if you'd seen the Serenity movie. Likewise, I think the same was true of the Serenity movie for people who hadn't seen the Firefly TV show or watched the DVD set that had all of the episodes. There is an aspect of relying on the universe having been built up from the TV show, the movies, and whatnot. Not just here, but you see that in Star Trek, Doctor Who, Buffy, any major licensed property. It's just nature of the beast. You know, more people have seen it. It's something that's fair for people to rely on. Heck, even non-licensed properties. Batman, Superman, Spider-Man, Wolverine. The writers assume you know certain things just going in. But I think if you don't have that experience watching the previous stuff, you're not going to fully appreciate some of what goes on, and more importantly, you're not going to have the connection and attachment to the characters, and that'll cut down on I think, the enjoyability of the story some.
I would take it a little further and say that if you had just binge watched the entire season on Blu-ray and watch the movie and then pick this up, you would get some enjoyment out of it. If you haven't done that and you had any kind of time off from this property, I don't think it's going to work for you.
Really?
And maybe I didn't really like Firefly as much as I thought I did at the time, because this book did nothing for me. It didn't give me any kind of nostalgia. It didn't pick up where any of those properties left off in my head. I didn't see any of the characters when I was reading it. I didn't like the art. I thought the story was all over the place. And I see nothing here to recommend to anyone.
Wow.
Except those, the diehards that are obviously more diehard Firefly fans than I was. And I would think you would have had to have really devoured those episodes and just watched the movie recently to enjoy this. I don't see it. I mean, the Dexter licensed property that we got from Marvel, I mean, artistically it took off on its own path, but it spoke with the voice and it picked up where the show left off. The X-Files licensed property that I'm reading, you know, it picks up in both visually and speaking with that voice, it continues that property. Of course, the Star Wars by Brian Wood does this same thing, and of course I'm really immersed in that property, but for me this I didn't enjoy this at all.
Well, sorry to hear that. I mean,
yeah,
I can kind of see some of where you're coming from, because I think this was a little drier than either the movie or the TV show, but I think a lot of that comes down to a fair portion of what made the TV show and the movie really work was they had a great cast that really kind of, you know, popped off the screen or whatever. The delivery of the lines,
great chemistry.
Yeah, that was a show that the characters came out fully formed versus taking half a season to really kind of gel as to who they are. I think the art here by Georges Gente, who's best known for working on the Buffy comics, in some places nailed the likenesses, other places not so much. But I could see the characters as who they were. In a number of places, less so in others. So, I mean, I can see a little of where you're coming from there. I've got the DVD set. I've got, you know, both of the TV and the movie and such. In terms of binge watching it, just so people who are unfamiliar with the property know what sort of an investment that would be, 13 hours. So, if you've got a weekend day to kill, inside of 13 hours, you can watch the entire thing stem to stern. And it's well worth watching. I think it's great stuff. It was a show that was killed well before its time. And I think this suffers a little from the time that has elapsed since the movie came out. But I think it worked a lot better for me than it apparently did for you. But, you know, I have an attachment to these characters. I'm following a number of the actors in other shows after that. And maybe the baggage I'm bringing with me is helping me enjoy this comic more than what's actually on the comic book page. I can totally see that being the case, to a degree. But for me, this was a 4 out of 5. I enjoyed it. I want to see where it goes. And it very much seemed to be set firmly in the world of Firefly. And I'm looking forward to the next issues. I'm guessing it doesn't quite get the 4 out of 5 from you.
I'm coming in at a 1 on this. I don't think a 2 would be below average. I can't even give it that. I don't think this is for anybody but the most diehard of Firefly fans. And, I don't think the casual Firefly fan would even enjoy this. I really don't. And, I would love to be proven wrong. So please weigh in on a forum and chastise me greatly for misrepresenting your beloved Firefly if I'm wrong, but it is a 1 for me.
Wow. Pass. That is harsh. I mean, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel, and it's cool. It's unfortunate. I don't like anyone to give a comic a 1 that doesn't do the reader, the anybody any good, but that happens. Not everything is for everybody. I don't consider myself like the diehardest of diehard fans. I mean, every year I go to Comic-Con, I see people dressed up as the various Firefly characters.
Yeah, doing that, right.
I'm like, wow, that's hardcore. I'm not that hardcore, but I enjoyed the stuff. So, interesting. Definitely, I hope, listeners chime in on the forum, see where they wound up, because that's, definite difference of opinion. And it's funny because for a lot of the things we've talked about, our opinions may not be in lockstep, but not as diametrically opposed as that. Matter of fact, I would be hard pressed to.
You know where it is? You know where it happens the most? In the other publisher category. I think in Marvel and DC, we tend to agree or be pretty close in our estimation of ranking those. But when it gets into the other categories, the other publisher category, like Midas Flesh, we were really far apart. This one, those are the only two that come to mind off the top of my head.
You're right. Midas Flesh was another. I gave it a 4. You gave it a 1. That's fair. I do think our taste in, the non-Marvel DC areas does tend to differ a lot more than in the Marvel DC. But I think that's also nature of the beast. Since Marvel and DC is predominantly superhero stuff, it's less diverse by nature.
Yeah.
Speaking of other stuff, what else did you read this week that was interesting?
Well, something that you think is good, not great, and I think is great, is Saga 18.
I was going to say, let me guess, he's going to talk about Saga now, isn't he?
It was a great capper for the third story arc, leading into another planned hiatus and trade. This hiatus is going to be a little longer. I believe we're off until May this time, which at least we know it's coming. I don't like it, but we know it's coming. It's planned. It's, you know, you can read some The Private Eye. Could take this time to read up on The Private Eye and get your Brian K. Vaughan fix. It ended on a great note that I don't want to spoil, but it was a really great writing choice to advance the story that, I think is really going to pay dividends. And, the story, it's always a good issue. They're always great issues, but I think this one was a notch above the 18 to catapult us into this next story arc coming up, in May. I thought it was a great issue. I really love it.
That time delay does kind of suck, but I think it is a smart move for them to do that if that's what they need to do, a sustainable pace. And I'd rather see them take a few months off between arcs or, you know, whatever. Only a few months. And really, yes, May seems like a long time, but it's not like it's going to be, you know, December. You know, it's not like it's 10, 12 months or something crazy. You know, 2 or 3 months off, fine. I get it. And they'll come back. They'll do another arc. They'll take a pause. They'll do another. I'm fine with that.
I like the 1 month pauses a lot more than I like this pause. That's pretty sizable.
I think the 1 month on the one hand, is better. It breaks up the story momentum less, but they're parking it at a good place to do the pause.
Yeah.
They're saying up front what it's going to be. And I don't know that 1 month gives them enough downtime to really recharge, recalibrate, do whatever other stuff they need to be doing. I think 3 months is reasonable. I would not push it past that. Obviously, yeah. 2 would be better than 3, but I mean, I don't think it's unreasonable. I can see the frustration. You want more of it and you want it sooner.
Now, over in Dark Horse, they do this with Resident Alien, but they do them as 3-issue, 4-issue miniseries and then renumber, retitle, and then launch another one when they come back. I wonder why Saga doesn't do that. You know, it could be, you know, whatever the storyline is, the story arc is, Saga whatever, 1 through 6, take a break. You know, Saga whatever the storyline is, 1 through 6, take a break. And I wonder what the choice is there. Probably creator choice, I would guess.
Oh, certainly creator choice. But it's interesting. We've seen the do a break, renumber with a new miniseries a number of times. It's very common. Yet we've also seen cases where they'll do kind of what Saga has done, you know, what would be the equivalent of a series of miniseries, but with continual numbering. We've even seen some titles go from the individually numbered miniseries back to, well, we've really done 17 or 72 or whatever. We'll just number the next one 73 and move from there.
Oh, when does that happen?
That happened with Hellboy, I believe. That happened with Star Wars X-Wing Rogue Squadron, maybe. And in some cases, they've done kind of the dual numbering. So some people think you're better off with the lower numbers. Some people think you're better off with the higher numbers. I think Again, I think Saga's doing some smart moves as to how they're doing this. Keeping the numbering going, yes, this is an ongoing thing. Versus if they did just renumbering and subtitling or whatever, it gets confusing as to where does this fit in. One of the things like that is Smallville Season 11 Special Number 4 came out this week. I read it. I thought it was good. But between that, Harbinger, Aliens, Titans, which I guess is what this one printed or whatever, it's hard to know where some of these things are. They coming out in print in the order they are coming out digitally or not? I'm unclear. And by the titles, I can't tell. Whereas if they were numbered consecutively with issue numbers, like Saga's doing, piece of cake. I know where they fit.
Yeah. That's the advantage. And I mean, I like the idea. I like if they're going to do it, let's do it this way. And I think Resident Alien should do it that way as well.
Well, and with Resident Alien, I never know when I should expect or if I should expect another miniseries.
Yeah.
You know, Saga, it's like, you know, so many months on, so many months off, so many months on, so many months off. Or, you know, even if it's not like clockwork, they tell me ahead of time, hey, we're going to take a few off and come back.
And Hawkeye should have done this.
Yes.
And said, you know what, we're going to tell Kate's story for the next 5 issues, and then we'll come back with some more of Clint stuff and let us know. And I mean, I'm waiting till the middle of February for a book that was solicited in July for July.
That's an issue of Hawkeye?
Issue 15 was supposed to be out in July.
Wow.
And I'm not going to get it until the middle of February. And that's just ridiculous. And I even ordered the stinking Lego variant, you know, because I was so psyched about it. And so I've been waiting for a long time for that Lego variant cover.
That's crazy.
I whined about this last week, so I'm gonna stop whining about Hawkeye.
You'll have until it comes out to keep whining, I'm just saying.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, along the lines of another Marvel kind of snafu or whatever, and I don't know whose fault it was. I think it was with the Marvel previews, but I got Cable and X-Force number 19 this week, which is a week after it came out. I didn't get it when it originally came out because I hadn't ordered it because it wasn't on the previews to order.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
One of the downsides of pre-ordering. But DCBS was on the ball, sent me an email, hey, do you want it? And I got it in pretty short order, so I was happy. Which is good, because it was part 3 of the storyline that continued in Uncanny X-Force that had part 4 this week. So I was able to actually read them, and in the correct order, which is helpful, because we're only a week or two away before we get X-Force number 1 that replaces both titles.
Oh, both of them are ending?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least I believe they are. I am finding it challenging to keep track of what's coming and going, so... I think I said last week that I had more or less a net change of nothing in terms of what I'm reading over the thing. It is now, as of this week, a drop of 3 titles just because I hadn't realized some of the stuff from the week was ending. And some of it is I'll read it. It's like, oh, I guess that's done. Well, going back to that Smallville special, is Smallville Season 11, is it done? Is it not? I'm not really sure. So at some point I may update that with, well, I guess that was it.
I did finish up Green Team's final issue.
Yeah,
I decided to pop back in for that, and you know, it's not great, but it was better than I remembered.
It was a strong issue for the title, which isn't saying a whole lot. And I liked how they gave it an exit strategy of hey, follow it to this other title, which is Teen Titans, which ironically has also been announced as canceling. I wonder if they're connected. And I'm not sure that Teen Titans is going to have time to deal with what happened at the end of Green Team.
Can we talk about that? Or is that too much of a spoiler?
I think it's a little bit of a spoiler, and it's either a spoiler or it's not worth talking about because it'll never be followed up on.
I was assuming it was going to be part of a relaunch, maybe. But
It may be that when Titans goes away, it gets replaced with some other kind of more general title in what had been the Young Justice line of books from the New 52, of which there's not much of any left.
Yeah.
But if you're a huge, huge fan of the Green Team, thinking, where will I ever see these characters again? Maybe in Teen Titans. But you will have read the last issue, so you will have known what's going on, and you would have figured that out on your own. So, wow, that was helpful.
We get the second issue of The Saviors, James Robinson black and white book that I believe we reviewed that first issue.
Yes, we did.
And I thought it was pretty good. I thought issue 2 was pretty good. I was concerned that it was going to kind of go off the rails, but I kind of liked it.
I liked it. I still haven't decided if I'm going to continue with it or not. I liked it enough. I probably will. I just haven't actually gotten it added to my order and such.
Yeah.
So I think we're recording this on Thursday. Over the weekend, as I put together the preview spotlight and such, all of which will have happened before the episode is released on the Monday, I'll hopefully straighten out what I need to have ordered and not ordered and what I'm, sampling, what I'm not, and, get that squared away. Make some decisions.
I won't order my stuff until next week.
I won't actually put in the order, but I need to at least figure some stuff out, and that's usually a good time when I'm going through the previews to, I need to be tracking what titles I've kind of got on probation, which ones I don't. Because I've taken my my spreadsheet of everything I'm reviewing, and I went ahead and added in all the titles I've got on order and just kind of filled that out a little better. I've got like 267 titles right now that will have been active at some point during the year, and looking forward another week or two, since we picked 2 weeks out, I went ahead and added those things to just as placeholders. I've got stuff from like 218 of the titles within the first 6-7 weeks of the year. But obviously some of that will change based on what actually ships, what doesn't, yada yada. A lot of stuff, though. Did you give up on Talon, or are you writing that out until it dies?
Oh, no, yeah. I stopped when James Tinian took over.
Oh, that's a real shame, because this would have been a great issue to bail on. I hate to say that, but man, 15? It's like the narrative structure drove me nuts. It felt like it was the whole issue was just backwards. And it was narrated to me versus shown to me. Such it was just wow.
I'm concerned about I'm concerned about his role on Batman Eternal. Hopefully I haven't really fully grasped what Batman Eternal is going to be until we see some. I'm kind of anxious to see just how big a role Tinian has, because I haven't been really fond of any of his stuff.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, because a weekly title is a tough thing to do, and I think the Batman franchise, on the one hand, can support one, on the other hand, doesn't need one. There's some writers I'm seeing some really great stuff out of and would like to see more, and there's some I'm thinking, wow, that, again, like the Talon stuff just didn't click with me. They need some coaching, some guidance. They're not bad people. Yeah. They're not bad creators even. It's just that didn't work for whatever reason. I miss the days when they had editors that could really help get the best out of some of the creators. I don't think some of the creators these days have the advantage that some creators in past years have had of editors who just understood stories, understood comic storytelling and stuff. Could just say, hey, if you tweak this, you can get this out of it or whatever. But we'll see.
Oh, you think of Miracle Man 2?
It was better. Part of it was lower price point. Part of it was more actual content than filler. But still not particularly wowing. I mean, part of it, again, is I've already read this material.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's puzzling me the order in which they're releasing some of the stuff in the issues. Things seem to be a little out of order compared to how they were originally published. And it's generally not exactly what they had originally solicited.
Yeah.
Chris and I talked about that a little on the year-end, I think it was the year-end trade stuff. Maybe it was Sam and I talked about it after we recorded the year-end comics. I think it was Sam and I talked.
Well, nobody heard that one.
Nobody, well, the Sam one they heard, but not the stuff I didn't record and release. Yeah.
The stuff that you talk about off-air.
Off-air.
You tend not to hear that.
Which is good. Probably a good thing. Speaking of one of the things that happened off-air that I'll toss in, I got a correction from last week's episode.
Oh, okay.
We talked about the all-new Invaders. I thought Major Liberty was a new character. I was incorrect. Apparently he is not new, but was a short-lived one from around 1941. I want to thank Randy for emailing me and letting me know that. He's a huge Golden Age fan, has a lot more knowledge in that area of those characters and such than I do. So it was one of those that just had been used a time or two. They said, hey, let's dust them off and do them there. That makes sense.
Yeah.
He did seem to fit the time period pretty well, and that kind of explains that. So,
Rick Remender's Black Science number 3, that Image book. I didn't like this at first, but it is growing on me, and, it's starting to kind of pick up steam. Makes a lot more sense. I know the characters a little better now. And I was lukewarm at this on this title at first, but it has gotten better with each issue. Of course, we're only three issues in, but at this pace, number four should be really great. So if you haven't checked it out, it's a kind of dimension hopping sci-fi book. And if you like science fiction, it's really well done and, cool art and, trippy story and, just another in a line of Image books that I'm loving.
So when you say, you know, alternate timeline, alternate parallel world type stuff, so like a Sliders sort of a thing, or?
There's this thing the main scientist has created called the Pillar, and he described it as all these dimensions are different layers of the onion, and that it's broken or has been sabotaged, we're not sure, but it kind of moves them from dimension to dimension each issue, and they have no control over that, and so they're just kind of popping in these new places, a la Quantum Leap kind of
okay,
a thing.
Okay, or sort of a little like Sliders.
Maybe, I never saw that show.
They had the timer and got moved from world to world.
Yeah, but so yeah. It's kind of like that. And these are alternate timelines. You know, this version has Native Americans with like mech robots and fighting World War I soldiers. So it's a different history timeline and of what happened and, some really inventive stuff. You know, the first issue had some, frogmen aliens in it that were wreaking havoc that they popped into that dimension. So there's some really science fiction elements in here. And so and you get more and more backstory told a la flashbacks. As the story's being told. So, kind of cool.
Sounds interesting. I may have to check that out.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can review issue four.
Maybe. Let me see if I can, if that's Image, right?
Yeah.
So I'll see if they've got the other issues on the press site and check that out. And if I do, we may do number four and, go from there.
If we don't, we'll never know.
Yeah. Well, that's how you got me on Zero and a few other things. So totally. How many comics are you reading a week on average?
The last, this 2025.
2025. Okay. Yeah. I've been realizing I'm doing about 51 a week this year. And so, yeah, a lot of good comics coming out. I got to agree with that. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
Man, a bunch of good stuff came out, but that'll do it for now, man.
All right. Cool. Join us next week for Green Lantern Red Lanterns number 28 from DC, Loki, Agent of Asgard number 1 from Marvel, and Archer and Armstrong, Archer number 0 from Valiant Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.